We got to see Victor put up some crazy numbers. Is that, have you want to rethink anything with Chet? Sorry, bro.
No. I love how you lead in like this. This is great because I think it's perfect. Perfect how to start off this podcast. As everybody's joining us, welcoming you guys live. I appreciate you guys jumping on here. But how do I feel about Victor? Okay, so he scored pretty well, right? But I felt like I was almost watching
an old school
player, bro. Like two-dimensional player in the aspect of he can score and he can rebound and play defense, right? Just like that aspect that, you know, that's cool. But one of the things that the NBA is changing is the big man needs to be able to pass the ball at a high, high level.
Right. What's up, Keelan?
And I watch how Chet throws the ball around the court and stuff like that. And that's the top echelon of what big men are going to be able to do. You know, like if you're Victor and you play an entire game and you don't have a single assist and you're taking one shot or one footed 3-point jump shots, I get concerned because am I watching somebody that's so concerned about scoring that nothing else matters to him? And if that's the case, then one dimensional big man. And it's what's in my headline today. It's like, think about this, guys. It's the old school brute. One-dimensional defender that can play one position, maybe two if he's lucky, if the guy's not too fast. Like, that's the old school, man. Like, we're no longer there. We're in the new school. We're in the new school where they can play, you know, five through two. They can block shots. They can rebound. They can score. They can get assists. Like, it's not going to be a coincidence when Chet becomes the next player to get a quadruple-double in the NBA. What's up, little Mark?
I agree about what you're saying about Chet. I think it's tough because, you know, Victor and Chet happen at the same time pretty much now. So it's kind of like they're always going to be compared to each other. And sure, Victor put up, I think, 27 and 28 points.
Yeah.
But it's a summer league game. So after the last one, we don't want to get too excited or too down.
Yeah.
But my question comes down to, like, what we see from Victor is, like you're saying, like it was a lot of jump shot making. Like, yeah. He'd get in the post, and he was bigger, so he could finish over people.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to bully people in the league at first. Like, he sure might be able to go gadget arm, dunk over them.
Let's go for this. Let's just talk about this. The best way to express is looking at Jerry West. Jerry West said something that was truly phenomenal. I don't know when he said it, where he said it, but he said something about the dog. Like, everybody's always talking about the dog, right? Ooh. And right. He said he's the wolf that eats the dog, right? So Victor is the dog, right? He's like, you know, he can go out there and score. He can do all these other things. But Chet is the guy that devours that dog, that eats the dog, that makes everybody else go, oh, that's the real thing right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, as much as I want to say Victor is going to turn into a great NBA player, he is. That's not up to question. Is he going to be one of those guys that wins an MVP? Most likely. But his accolades will never come close to what Chet's going to be able to accomplish in his career. And it's because of what Chet is able to do across the board. You know, like, is Victor going to be able to go out there and average 25 points a game and 12 rebounds and 5 block shots in a season? Most likely, yes. Is Chet going to be able to do that? Hell yes. But you throw in there that Chet can throw in, you know, 5 or 6 assists a game, you know, like, it's a different thing. It's the Joker effect, bro. If you look at the way that Jokic plays, man, it's all about that. It's about, I can score 50 points if I want to, but what I want is I want my whole team to be good. You know, like, it's the aspect of that. And now I think Chet can be at that level that Jokic is, right? Of passing the ball, scoring at will. But his defense is going to be next level. And that's why I think about when I said the headline and I think about the headline of this podcast, it's why I think Chet is going to be better than all the rest. It's all the rest. I mean, like, I look at the standard of the big man, and yes, we have bigger men coming. I recently watched a video of this 16-year-old Australian kid that's 7'3".
What's up, Sam? What's up, Road Dog?
What's up, guys? But I like these players that are coming up. But just because you're taller and you have handles and all these other stuff doesn't mean that you can be a wolf. And in order to be good in the NBA as a big man, you got to go against the wolf. And to me, that wolf is Chet. And he's just going out there and what he's able to do. And just take a second and look at how Chet has blocked the shots that he has in Summer League. It's not like he's there waiting for the block shot.
What's up, Bluegill?
He's traveling to get to that spot. He's able to see where the ball is going. He's able to see who's attacking the hole, and he's able to attack that, the ghost blocker. It's amazing, man.
Absolutely, man. There's a lot of elements that really get us fucking pumped up about this, bro. And obviously, you know, Peter's asking a little question real quick about, is the NBA rigged, the Chet versus Victor box office attraction? Was this something that NBA set up because they wanted to see San Antonio get Victor? I would say that the Spurs knew how to get the best odds they could for Tim Duncan. I would say that they just executed a plan that's been proven to work for them before. It takes a little bit of luck, maybe a little bit of help. But before we go too far into that, I want to just give a quick shout out to everybody who is, as we call them, the Worldwide Thunder family, the people who help us out, support the podcast. Mark Howitt, Ryan Sheffield, El Sombro, welcome to the family, brother. Niner by Nature, Unk, John Flapp, Blake Thompson, Kay Bizzle, Smitsta, Cameron Peters, Wayne Hode, Bluegill, good to see you. Thanks for stopping in. And Golden Soldier, Bluegill, we love it when you stop in. Get to work. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, man, we appreciate all you guys. Just trying to figure out this whole YouTube platform, and it's pretty crazy what you can do. So, again, thank you for making us part of your everyday life. But jumping back, man, to this idea that the same concerns that I had about Victor, man, right? I've seen in the last two games.
Right.
You know, and that's it. You know, like the last two games, all the concerns that I've had about Victor, I'm sitting there going, okay, yep, I see that too. Like his passing. Yeah. Listen, he does some great passes, right? But the reality is that in order to be a big man, you have to keep that lane free and open. You got to be able to keep that eye on the three-point line to be able to pass that ball back out and take a couple dribbles and throw it out there. And you've got to be able to get the ball up the court quickly, which Chet can do. And the thing is about Victor is the same issues that Chet's had about dribbling the ball and guys, you know, tipping the ball and stuff like that because the short guys out there going fast, Victor's had too. So it's going both ways with these tall guys. It's going to take time for them to develop. But I feel like, I don't know, man. I see Chet and he's willing to do whatever it takes to get better. And I see Victor and it's like, okay, like he's incredibly talented. He's doing all these crazy, amazing things. But again, it's what's best for Victor. You know, I go back to the Britney Spears situation. I mean, why not? You know, like that's another situation. He listens to his bodyguard saying, don't stop. It'll create a situation on your hands. You know? Hey, Ben, we appreciate you, man. Welcome to the Worldwide Thunder family. Hell yeah. But it goes back to that situation.
Welcome, Ben.
Britney Spears there, you know, like the situational awareness situation, you know, like the recognition that you don't need five bodyguards to surround you. You know, like, I get it. You're a new person coming to the United States. But five bodyguards and then one of them slaps Britney Spears. Like, what do you like everywhere he goes the rest of the season, all these Britney Spears people are going to give him shit, bro.
They should.
And they're going to. They're never going to let him down for that. And my point about that is a situational awareness. That's what this is all about. And that's why Chet is just going to gobble people up like motherfuckers, bro. And he's going to make them wish that it's going to be like, is it Paulo or Pablo?
Paulo, yeah.
No, that's what I'm going to say. People are going to be asking, was it Paulo or Pablo? Who went ahead of Chet again?
Dude, Vic's got some good points here. Let's start with one he made a few minutes ago, which is, are you a one-dimensional player if you can also play the other end, though? Victor's out there blocking shots and playing offense. So is that one-dimensional? What do you think?
I think I said one or two-dimensional, but the point is that a one-dimensional big man, right, should be able to score play defense. It just is, you know, and especially in the NBA. In the NBA, I don't know many big men that can't score and play defense, you know, at least a semi-high level. You think about Bam, and he's averaging, what, 14, 16 points a game or something like that? And to me, that's still high level, right? So I don't know. Like, I look at this and I say, I feel like Bam, and I feel like Victor and these guys like that, that are going to be playing on defense like this, that I, man, when I say, it's hard for me for Victor, because I want to say things that is only going to fire people up. If you're a Victor fan, you're going to get fired up about what I have to say about him, because there's a certain mentality and attitude that has to happen in the NBA for you to be considered even a great or even a top 10 in your position. And the fact is that, like, San Antonio's got a great, amazing player, but he needs a lot of work. And do they have the people around him to create that? Yes, because now Popovich is staying for another 5 years. Five-year, $80 million deal. So
I think that's a huge mistake. I'm wrong a lot, but I think that, like, one of the things that I really respected about Sam Presti was when he brought in a younger generation, he brought in a younger generation of coaches. It doesn't just start with Coach Daigneault, right? You look at the assistant coaches and stuff, like, they're all learning together. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a huge risk to have a coach there that maybe can't relate to the generation he's coaching.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. I think Victor will do well with Coach Popovich, but to my point is, with everything else, is that sometimes a player just doesn't have it, and you don't realize that until after he's been drafted.
Okay, so before we go too far with Vic is calling us out, and I think it's appropriate because we want to be challenged. We're not, you know,
yeah.
We don't want to be in an echo chamber. What he's saying, Victor's worked incredibly hard as well, and I think it's unfair to say he's mainly about himself. LOL, he's getting all the hype, and he can't control it. And I agree with that. But I think after, like, I have to admit, I didn't watch the actual game, but I watched the highlight package, and I saw, you know, enough of the low lights from the previous game to say, like, Victor kind of needs the ball in his hands to be impactful on the offensive end at this phase. It can change. Anybody can improve. But
Popovich is going to pull that out of him. Is he going to pull it out of him, or it's going to make him feel like he's a small, small child? You know, it's one way or the other.
Dude, do you think that Popovich kind of drew up some of those play sets to put Victor in some success? Like, even though he wasn't coaching, obviously, like, they're working with their coaches. Do you think they were like, let's get him high post, let's get him clicking, let's get him knocking down some shots where he's got space?
Yeah. All right. Real quickly, before we go any further, Biscuit, we are going to be doing a call-in show starting here soon, where we're able to just open it up to anybody that wants to call in and talk hoops for a little while. I'm definitely going to be doing that. I'm excited about that. Mark and I are working out the logistics of that, and we should be up and ready to go so people can call in pretty soon.
We're looking forward to it. We got details to work out. I'm still, like, in the middle of a bunch of transitions. Dave's taken over so much of this, like, the podcast. He's, like, running everything now. No, you are. I just show up and talk. So, well,
I did that for 3 years, so I feel like I think it's good to go on that one.
OSU Trade Deuce, shout out. You said it. Oh, hell. You called it. Kaysen Wallace. Wow.
I think we just got to go back to when Sam Presti makes a trade, or a trade, a pick, you know? And then also, I want to throw this out here, is that what Sam Presti did to protect J-Dub to stay on the Thunder spectacular. And what he did to make sure that Kaysen was on the Thunder this year was truly spectacular. And it goes back to what I have to say about a lot of things, but the future of the NBA, and as it's changing, there's going to be a couple drafts that Sam Presti doesn't want anything about. He's like, no, I'm staying out of these drafts. You know, we're going to start seeing those drafts get traded away.
Right.
Those draft picks. And when those draft picks get traded away for players or moving up in the draft, you know, we won't see the immediate impact of, oh, wow, why did Sam Presti trade two of those first-round draft picks just to move up two spots or three spots or something like that? Well, we won't know until later. And I think that's the greatest thing about what Sam's doing with the accumulation of draft picks, is that 15 over the next 7 years in the first round, which is, you know, two plus a year. I think there is like 1 year where we have one pick, right? And all the rest of them, we have tons. And then we've got 30 or 20 second round picks, 20. And we've seen what's happened with these picks that are people are trading like, what, 5 or 6 second round picks with? You know, like it's crazy, man. So having these this much draft capital is it makes it easy for Sam Presti to put players around Chet and Shea and J-Dub and Kaysen and that. It's just building everything that we need to this team. And when we say that we need big man or we need a power forward or small forward, like, listen, this team is not defined by one position. And I think that's why when we talk about truly non-positional basketball, that has a lot to do with the fact that you're putting as many guards out there as possible. Even though you want to say it's non-positional, it's really a guard-driven game at this point. You know, we've seen glimpses in the past where it's like, oh, it could be a guard-driven game, but no, not like this, man. Like, when you're able to look at Chet and you say, yeah, Chet's a big man, but he has guard handles and can play like a guard, you know? Like, it's different.
What's up, Wyatt? All right, so a couple things real quick. Phantom saying Victor reminds him a lot of Usman Jang as far as maybe like not necessarily sure where they're supposed to be at certain times. I'm thinking like it's going to take some time. What do you think about like a situation like with Chet? If Chet was out there playing the San Antonio offense, they were throwing him the ball, asking him to shoot a lot, like versus what we do see, which is like,
but that's not Chet's game though, man. Like
not Chet's game, but listen, it's also not our style.
Sure.
So you see him playing from the perimeter orientated, getting downhill, not playing like back to basket from the high post, turn face up, that type of stuff. We're not running the offense through him as if he's a traditional post player. And that's what it seemed like. That's what he looked best in that situation yesterday. Victor did.
Yeah. I would love to be able to see Victor in a, like an offense, like the way that we run the offense. And obviously what the San Antonio Spurs are trying to do is put the ball in Victor's hands constantly, you know, and that's fine. And I understand that. But did you see that screenshot that I sent you of the game?
Yeah. You sent that. That was that knee bang.
All right. So I want to be clear with this is that there's certain times that I watch a player get injured or almost injured that I stop, you know, that I'm like, okay, that's different. Right. Victor was setting a screen and I call it butterfly legs. And anytime that I've taught the pick and roll, I've taught anybody about the pick and roll, it's always you keep your legs straight up and down or with inside of your shoulder frame. Right.
Right.
And the reason
up right now, bro.
And the reason is that because if you don't, you hit knees with somebody, bro, it will change your mindset really fucking fast. Okay. All right. So Mark, you're pulling this up, but bonking knees, man, that's it, bro. Like getting a knee in the dick. I mean, that will change your mindset really quickly too. So as you're watching the screen recording that I took right there of this the situation, you'll see
his knee go in.
His
right there.
His knee goes in.
Pops in.
And it's like, holy shit. Well, can we see? There we go. All right. So boom. Like it just locks it in, man. Look at this. That's a torn ACL in the works, man. You cannot set screens like that at all. And that's the one thing I get concerned about. And thanks for replaying it over and over again, because it needs to be seen. There's certain things, right, that a player can do that you're just like, holy cow, you know, like we can't see stuff like that. If I'm Coach Popovich, I'm saying, listen, bah, you know, don't do that. You know, like telling you guys, I've hit knees with people before. I've gotten a knee in the dick. I've gotten knees in the kidneys because I didn't set screens right. I did a side screen once and I got the guy jumped up and hit me right in the, oh dude, it hurts, man. Like it changes your mindset on how you set screens. So setting a screen properly and teaching a proper screen is critical. So when you see a player that doesn't set a screen properly, right? If that was Dort taking that screen, that would have been going the other way, first of all. Second of all, that knee would never be the same because Dort is low to the ground and is going to snap that. So for me, I'm seeing these things and I'm like, okay, if Victor can stay healthy for 70 games, then yes, he could be eventually a first team all NBA. But seeing something like that and seeing him go up for a rebound and him getting knocked over and it looks serious and him falling down, dude, there's so many things that I've seen in the last couple of games and I'm like, is he going to be able to make it? Because he's still not playing against the strongest and the fastest and the best the league has to offer.
Yeah. Wyatt Warner, congratulations on your season tickets, man. That's exciting.
That's great awesome,
timing.
Man.
Great timing. What do you think about what we're seeing with overall with Kaysen? I mean, he's obviously got everybody excited.
Yes, he should though, man.
We talked a lot about this last time. But one thing like Phantom is saying here is that he might be the third best player in the draft, according to him. Now, Phantom's throwing a haymaker here with Jairus Walker, the best, Amen Thompson, number two. But personally, I think I don't necessarily agree with that top end, but I do agree that Kaysen has a chance to be the third best player in the draft. Is that how you feel about it too?
I think he has a chance to be the second best player in the draft. I think him, Anthony Black, and Victor will always have that the top three spots. I looked at Anthony Black as a hybrid guard in this draft and, you know, probably the best hybrid guard in this draft, whereas Kaysen was the best point guard, I felt, outside of Scoot. So, you know, I think you're looking at some fun things going to happen in the future, but I do think that the future looks very bright for some of these young, very talented players.
All right, man. Let's see. So Phantom is saying that he actually emailed you and it didn't go through. It got bounced back. So that's just a heads up there. But he also just mentioned he was at the game on Saturday in Vegas.
Yeah.
He met J-Dub. His pops met J-Dub and pops somehow convinced him to surprise him in the tunnel. And the fact that J-Dub took the time to meet him shows him the type of person he is. Damn. That's
awesome, man.
Yeah, man. That's definitely a lifelong memory right there. That's so dope. And J-Dub, bro, somehow he gets lost in all the mix.
Well, here's the reason he's getting lost in all the mix right now is because Kaysen is a rookie and Chet's a rookie. So all of our eyes and all of our stuff is focused towards
him. James,
we had all last year to talk about J-Dub in the beginning and the end and all the, I mean, I don't think we did not talk about J-Dub in every single episode. I mean, he was on that topic, but last year we didn't talk about Chet every single episode, you know? And now we get to talk about Chet and Kaysen. So this is not a diss on J-Dub at all in any stretch of the imagination. This is just us getting familiarized with this new team that is coming through. And J-Dub's got that starting position on lock. I mean, there's just no doubt in my mind. The second he went out there and just dominated the first G League game or the first summer league game and then didn't play after that, it was obvious what was happening.
Yeah, man.
100% road dog.
Exactly, Wyatt.
What's up, James?
This rookie. It's two T's like titties.
Yes. You put an I in between the two T's and you got what? Tits, baby.
All right. Dave, I think here's what Vic's saying. I think going from 35 games, shorter quarters, less possessions to 82 games, NBA season is going to be rough. It's going to need a lot of load management.
It is.
The wear and tear beat you up. There were a number of shots that I noticed Victor made that were extremely unorthodoxed. Jumped without facing the basket. Really didn't have his feet underneath him and things like that.
Some of the concerning things.
But some of those shots went in.
Yeah, but
is it still concerning?
Nah. How do you explain this? I think of the Morris twins a lot in the NBA, right? You know how the Morris twins get under your skin? Like, in every aspect, if you're playing against them, even as a fan, like, oh, right. Like they do stupid stuff, like get underneath you and create this weird contact when you go up for shots and stuff like that. I keep on thinking like, how is Victor going to go against the Morris twins? And if you think about the Morris twins and their aspect of like, they're the least scary big man in the NBA. And that's how I look at it. I mean, I'm not even talking about Brooke Lopez or Giannis or any of these other guys. I'm going with the least scary big man in the league. And it's like, how is he going to do against the Morris twins? You know, how is he going to do against these guys that are like 6'10", thick and pushing and playing a semi dirty, you know?
Right.
What's up, Mark? And that's it, man. It's the semi dirty, you know? That's the thing that I look at is how is he going to react to that? Because he's never seen that.
What's up,
he's
James?
Never been the rookie. Like, think about this. Michael Jordan walks up to, was it Shaq, and said, welcome to the NBA or something like that. And Shaq like made some joke and then Jordan dunked on him and then yelled, welcome to the NBA, Rook. So it could have been Tim Duncan. I don't know who it was, but somebody did it. Michael Jordan did it. And then they yelled at him, welcome to the NBA. And my point about that is that how is a player going to handle being embarrassed when they've never been embarrassed before? And then after that, it's a whole new ball game because we've seen what happens with players that get lost in their heads.
Right.
And to me, like, that's what I keep going back to is that like players like Steven Adams that are going to go and play him is going to frustrate him beyond anything he can ever imagine. And the thing is about the league is that there's so many players like the rough and tough and mean players that like, it's never going to stop for him. And yeah, how much can he take?
If you're used to being like 5-7 inches taller than everybody, and then all of a sudden you go up against Steven Adams and you're only 3 inches taller, but you lose 50 pounds.
I like James's question here. So let's hit this question up, man. What is a unique lineup you could see working? All right. You ready for this, guys? All right. This is the one lineup I keep on talking about that I love, 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 love the idea of it. All right. So we've got at the guards positions, or let's just say the wings, we got Shea, Giddy, Dort, right? Lockdown, great defenders, those three. At the forward position, as you would say, J-Dub and Kenny Hustle at the center. I think that's going to be incredibly unique. I know that that's just switching Chet and Kenny Hustle out, but here's the thing. How many teams are going to be able to stick with us when we have a team like that out in the court? That's all up and down, running. I mean, those guys would be able to run nonstop on everybody. Kenny Hustle's a rebounder. People are like, oh, what about a rebounder? Well, what about Josh Giddey? Kenny Hustle. These guys are big guys. Shea can go out there. Dort can go out there. J-Dub can get rebounds. Like, we rebound as a team. So we played all last year without a big, big body in the center. So it's not that big of a difference when you look at it. I look at Kenny Hustle being one of those connection players that you can play him in any position, and he's going to give you 110% and create the maximum amount of just balls to the wall play.
So for me, I think mine is probably what I think would be our best lineup. But it's not super interesting. It's like Giddy, Chet, J-Dub, Kaysen, and Shea. Like, I feel like that's the team that you're going to probably have your best plus minus out there. It's really not super duper interesting other than the fact that all five guys can play guard. Chet can cover the post. Giddy's like sitting there defending the four. Or you can switch it to J-Dub. You're going to put maximum pressure on the ball. You're going to be out and running a lot. Yep. Team's going to have trouble scoring.
I like it, man.
It's kind of what I expect to see a lot of. So it's really not super interesting. What would be like the biggest lineup you think we could run out there?
All right. So you put Chet at the point guard.
or Josh is probably still out there, you know?
Well, here's the thing though. Like, yeah, you throw Josh out there at point guard, I guess. You put Chet at the wing. You put J-Will in the corner. You put Poku down low / top of the key if you need to. And then you throw, I don't know, Kenny Hustle out there. You could throw, I mean, yeah. You would have almost an average size of like 6'9" out there. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Be a lot of fun.
I mean, Ooze there. You got Ooze, Poku 3. I like Bertans. Like, here's the thing. I keep going back and forth with this, man. Like, I'm struggling at this. I'm glad you guys asked OSU. I'm trying to think who else asked recently. Final trade, Phantom. Final roster. All right, guys, let's talk about that for a second.
There's certain guys here every time.
Yeah, this one really, like, it's crazy to me because Like, either way we want to put it, we're cutting or trading a couple 21-year-olds. Like, it's impossible unless we get rid of all the old guys and we keep only the young guys. But that's where I keep going back to, is that what Sam Presti was able to get out of value, first of all, for taking Patty Mills and then trading Patty Mills, I think he got like 4 second rounders and two 2021 first rounders out of the situation. So, like, again, and Rudy Gay. So how many guys we got to cut? We got to cut 5 guys, 6 guys. So that's where we're at. We either got to trade or cut. And if we trade, we've got to find a way to get rid of some of these 21-year-olds. When I say some of these, we've got Ty. We've got Usman, which Garuba. Is a new... Yeah, Garuba. He's a new guy on our team now. But we've got to find places. And if that means that we got to cut ties to some of these older guys that we have, like, it's going to suck. Because I don't want to get rid of some of these older guys that we have now that are going to be coming up for their contract years.
Absolutely, dude. Let's talk about... James says here, Chet, Poku, Jang, J-Dub, Giddy, and they say we're small, right? So here's my question, though, Dave. Who is our best shooting lineup? I'm going to go ahead and lead out with just saying two players. I'm going to put Isaiah Joe and Cason Wallace on that court right now. I know it's one summer league game. I'm getting a little excited here, but let's just ride with it. Those are our wings when it comes to shooting. Who else would be a part of our best shooting lineup?
All right.
I think J Will might be out there, bro.
J Will has to be out there. Okay, has to be. Three. But I was just trying to think about we got Trey Mann.
No.
Yeah, I gotta throw Trey Mann out there, bro.
No.
Dude, he dominates, man.
No.
All right, Shea.
I'm okay with him. It's just too streaky right now. Let's
all right. So my question is, you got, like, I look at Trey Mann
so and you
I
say
look
Shea. At, so yeah. Shea's good. All right, so that's
you got J Dub, Shea, J Will.
And Joe.
Yeah, Isaiah Joe.
And Cason.
What's that?
And Cason. I mean, just his form, his release point.
I would shot. Say Cason, like, especially because giving a rookie time like Ooh. That. But if we're going
Kenny
to
Hustle
go
at 40%,
that's good. I was going to say Road Dog. I was going to say Kenny Hustle. I would also say, I mean, Dort. I mean, everybody's going to laugh at that, but he's been shooting the ball a whole lot better recently. And I think that he can get his shooting form to about 40% this year. So I do think that Dort, you can't sleep on.
I mean, definitely. I think with the right shot selection, he could get there.
He likes that corner. That one spot, bro. Yeah. You know, that corner, that elbow, I guess you could call it.
Yeah. The elbow.
3-point elbow. Whew. There's money on that shot, bro.
I think, like, in the end though, Trey and Dort, both of those guys like to shoot a lot of volume, and they don't really have, like, a lot of conscience about whether or not they've hit, which is good. It's especially good if you're playing spark plug role or if you have, like, two or three players who are getting the, you know, a lot of double teams. You need guys to just, you know, make sure they create space. But if you're going for all space, like, you got to think Joe is the most impressive 3-point shooter at this point. And I have a feeling that Cason could actually pass him by the halfway point of the season. If he's a better shooter than Isaiah Joe, now, probably not from range, but like his ability to get his shot off and you're comparing it to him. What does that say about the long-term potential? And is there a chance that J-Dub could be better than both of them?
Well, I look at J-Dub as being a top 10 in his position by year three. So I have a hard time. A hard time saying that.
What's his position to you? A shooting guard, a small forward?
Bro, it's a utility player. It's coming back in the NBA. Like, you can have all these guys and say, this player does this, this player does that. But having a 6'6 forward of sorts that plays forward and guard, right? Again, a hybrid player. It allows you to do different things. So if he's playing the small forward and Josh has to play the power forward or J-Dub has to play the power forward, it doesn't matter. Like, I think when you're talking about it, it's all said and done. J-Dub is going to be that player that everybody looks back at as, you know, a Shea or as a Giannis or as a Kawhi. That was like, how did this player slip this far in the draft? And I think that's the facts about that is that when we're looking back in the future, the league, that's going to be the deciding factor, is how good J-Dub is going to be on this team. And to me personally, I think he could average 20 points a game this next year.
Dude, that was the number
20
I was thinking.
Plus.
I was thinking 20. I mean,
I think he's 22 to 24.
It's probably going to be 18 because
he's better than that.
The average 20 versus 18 comes down to how many games you have in single digits, really. Yeah. Like, he'll probably be about the same, but it's like the off days. How many off days can you afford to have an average 20? Not very many. But
how many games was in a row that he just played crazy? Just around the All-Star break.
15, I think. Yeah,
15
I think
or 20, right?
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was like insane numbers together. So for me, I look at that and say, okay, that's right. All right, if he did 20 games in a row like that, what's the difference between 20 and 40 with a second-year player that's worked his ass off in the offseason? Like, that's, to me, that's what I keep going back to.
The difference is being locked in from the first tip-off.
So if he can go 20 to 40, right, is there any other step-up that he needs to do in order to be able to have a 20-plus point season?
I mean, the thing is,
because 40 games in a row of lockdown basketball, high-end basketball, means that he could probably put together 60 really good games during the season.
For me...
And I think he's Jaylen Brown.
Look at the players that average 20 points a game their second year.
I know.
It's a really elite list.
I know. I'm telling you, J-Dub's elite. He's different, bro. Like, on every level, the way he gets up, the way he finishes... The way his body is, his arms, the way he gets up and down the court, the way he finishes, the way his shot is. Like, I keep going back to, when's the last time I've seen a player like this come out of college? And I want somebody out there to tell me that J-Dub isn't going to be one of the best players that have come out of college in the last 15 years. Because if you look at the what he is able to do right now and how he grew in college to the point of he is where he is now. And the fact is that by the end of the year, people are going to consider him as being one of the best premier young players in the league, period. They'll rank him above Ant. They'll rank him above everybody else like that. Like, he's going to just go, and everybody's going to be like, holy shit. I mean, that's how good J-Dub is. We can sit here and we could say, oh, he won't need to score 20 points a game. You're right. He won't. But it'll be easy for him. You know, driving to the hole, you know, seven times, getting layups, hitting one or two threes, and then getting fouled a couple times. Like, it will be easy for J-Dub to do it because he's so efficient.
Bob in Baja wants to know, does Poku have any trade value? First of all, we're not trading Poku, is my assessment, but that's not what you're asking. You're asking about value. So my quick answer would be, approximately what we got him for, like about like top 20 pick, but you're not going to get a top 15 pick. So in that range, maybe somewhere in the mid 20s, maybe a couple of second rounders. I think he's far more valuable after he shows a season of health, because what he's already shown is like glimpses of greatness.
I want him to play. I think he could average 2+ blocks a game for us. He's really efficient when he plays. Especially the beginning of the year before he got injured. If we're getting that Poku, I want him on our team for, you know, forever. Like, sign him to a, you know, $12 million, $13 million a year contract, whatever it takes to sign him on a 4-year contract, because he's the type of player that you need to have on your team that's coming in the game that can play, again, 5-3, 5-2. He's an excellent defender and he knows the game, and people want to make fun of his shot. That's cool. I don't give a shit. But the reality is that he has a shot that through time will develop into a very efficient shot in the NBA. So trading Poku, trade value on Poku, I would say the value wouldn't be there to trade Poku right now. So I would rather hold on to him to see what we can get in the long run.
Yeah. Matt, what's up, man? He says we need to keep him because he's Serbian like Micic. George Goodwin says Shai Giddey, J-Dub, Chet, and Poku is going to be our starters by Christmas. Dave,
I love
elaborate
it.
On that.
Dort is going to have to get injured for this to happen. I'm sorry, but Dort what he's doing. If you guys haven't seen any of his videos or anything like that, take time to watch what he's been doing in the summer league. Look at his body. It's different this year. He's out for blood. And I'm telling you guys, Dort's going to be that player that everybody's always thought he could be. One thing that we've watched him shoot, and I went back and looked at it, is I think he's shooting at like 54% at the rim for layups and stuff like that. I think that's going to be way higher. He got way stronger. He really focused on contact and finishing through contact this off year. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that we're going to be really surprised how good he is. So that could happen, George. Could. But I really, 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 really like Dort in that starting position until he's not.
I love what Phantom's saying here. J.W. like leap over Dort and Giddey to become the second best player on the team. I love it because it's going to require a leap, right? And we're up for anybody passing anybody that they can. And that doesn't mean anybody's not improving at the best rate they can. But I do think that J-Dub could really impress some people. Road Dogg says J-Dub has a career arc to become a celebrity, and he just puts butts in seats. And I think that that's a great way to look at it.
Hell yeah, dude. That's great. George says, man, I think J-Will will be Mr. Charge himself.
Yeah.
Will be good. He's looking way more confident. Mark and I both agree. We think he's going to break the record in charges, if not this year, the following year, and become Mr. Charge at year two or year three of his career. So huge, huge moment here for the Thunder.
Matt, Dort needs to stay as the point of attack defender to make sure that SGA and Giddey don't have to defend the other team's best guard. And Matt, you're right. But I wonder what will happen after a year of Case and learning from Dort. Will he pass the sensei?
Man, and I just want to take this time to give a huge shout out to all of our supporters out there. You guys are the bomb, whether you guys are throwing us a tip or you're joining the worldwide Thunder family, baby. The WWTF, baby.
Yeah, dude.
Mark Hewitt, Hawitt. Ryan Sheffield, El Sombro, Niner by Nature, Unc John, Flats, Blake Thompson, always my boy right there, K Bizzle, Smitsa, Cameron Peters, Wayne Hode, Blue Gill, yes, and Golden Soldier, as well as we just picked up a new one, Mark.
Our newest one, Ben.
Ben. We appreciate Mac you guys.
Lieberman. I hope I said that right, but I know I didn't.
We really appreciate all of you guys for making us feel loved. You guys are amazing, and we will be back for tomorrow's game at 6:30 Eastern, so it'll be 5:30 Central, guys. Hope to see you guys here live for the game.
All right, guys. We'll see you then.